Welcome to the airport lounge. Table for two gentlemen? Right this way. Here's your booth. Have a great show.
Welcome to the Airport Lounge, the Winnipeg Jets podcast, much like Kevin Sawyer, just making stuff up. I'm Mike Guthrie, and I'm joined by my good friend and Joe Thornton's AARP representative, Vaughn Mitchell. How's it going, Vaughn?
Good, Mike. Once again, we picked an incredible day to record a Winnipeg Jets-related podcast. Happy, happy times in Jetsville.
Nothing's going on. This might be a short one. No news, no trials and tribulations. I think we just probably end it there. Everything's good, and we're good to go.
Yeah. The ship is sailing in the right direction. No. But regardless of what the team is doing, we hope we can still have some fun on this podcast, and it won't be all doom and gloom. We're going to have some fun. We're going to have some laughs, and that's part of what being a fan's all about.
Agreed. Silver lining this thing.
You know, Mike, you know what? Before we go any further, I have to take a small degree of issue with your intrepid reporting on PLD's tattoos that you provided.
Uh-oh.
Our many listeners last week. Yeah, Mike, this starts bad for you and gets worse quickly. You kind of mocked him a little bit and suggested that they indicated he was a type of stoner or something like that. I'm just thinking back.
Well, I directly said
thanks
that,
to
yeah.
a listener. This is true. Thanks to a listener, I've been able to unearth from the deepest depths of the internet the true meaning behind the tattoos. And this is for real. I've been able to find out what the tattoos actually
mean. Am I going to feel really bad here?
Now, oh yeah. This is like I said, it starts bad for you and gets quickly very worse. Now I can see how you missed this information. It was buried on the web in a very dark place that not many people would likely have heard of. It's a website called The Athletic. It's a very obscure website.
Look, man, I'm not paying any more money for articles. I don't get The Athletic.
Your private sector research skills are just impeccable. In an October 2019 article on The Athletic, Allison Lucan speaks to PLD to get the real story on his tattoos. The article is entitled Ink at the Rink, The Stories Behind the Blue Jackets'
really?
Body Art. Yeah. Okay. So Miss Lucan writes, Pierre-Luc Dubois always has time to talk about tattoos. They're all about his family. Dubois' left arm is filled with memories of his grandparents. And let me skip forward here. I'm just going to focus on the butterfly and the palm tree. He's got a bunch of tattoos. They're all linked to his family. So let's talk about the image of a large butterfly. It represents his grandmother on his father's side, Mike, in a rather direct way. For 3 years, she was telling me not to get a tattoo, Dubois said. And then for my birthday this year, she told me that when she was my age, she was going to get a butterfly, but she got scared and bailed. So she still had the drawing. She gave him the drawing. So he got this tattoo of this butterfly that his grandma never did. So he's acknowledging his paternal grandmother. Okay. And you raised the palm tree. Okay.
Yeah, I sure
the
did.
Palm tree commemorates a trip a few years ago with his best friend. The tree symbolizes not just the trip, but also, in fact, their friendship proved strong enough to survive 3 weeks together, day in and day out. We didn't kill each other. We took a step, Dubois said with a smile. I work out with him in the summer. He pushes me. He's one of the reasons I'm in the NHL today. So, thank you, Allison Lucan, for your excellent journalism. Mike, not so much.
Look, I never claimed to be a journalist, and B, there's nothing that can disprove my new theory that he got too high and made this stuff up because he woke up one morning and was like, remember that old commercial where you're the man, cool guy, see you at the beach, and he had that giant mum tattoo on his back? Well, that's my story. I think PLD okay. woke up one morning and had... I'm just kidding. I apologize.
All right, I apologize. You're really sorry.
I'm really, really sorry. I apologize unreservedly.
You take it back?
I do. I offer a complete and utter retraction. The imputation was totally without basis in fact and was in no way fair comment and was motivated purely by malice. And I deeply regret any distress that my comments may have caused you or your family. and I hereby undertake not to repeat any such slander at any time in the future.
I figured at some point somebody was going to come in and had a reasonable explanation or a heartfelt story about why those tattoos were there. It didn't stop me from just making fun of him without any context. And look, if you're looking for hard-hitting reporting, go somewhere else. Turn off your podcast right
now.
Fair
enough.
Because this is what I
do. Fair enough, but I thought, you know, and this literally came from someone who listens to the podcast. They sent me this, and they went, yeah, you should know about this. So, well, your point's well taken. Any chance I have to throw something back in your face, I'm pretty much going to take it.
I'm actually glad you did, and that's it's super interesting. And I figured there were some stories behind it, but again, I'm not paying for The Athletic, so I went blind on it.
I signed up for an entire year just to get access to that story. I was so excited.
Nice. Well, duly corrected. I appreciate it.
Awesome. I also got some feedback from our buddy Dan. President and CEO of our main corporate sponsor, First Mining Gold.
Right.
He wanted to make sure that our many listeners understood that there were important differences between strip mining and open pit mining and some other blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, you lost me
yeah,
there.
Thanks, Dan. Yeah, I guess there's a difference between stabbing someone to death and shooting them with a gun. Important distinctions.
There is a few years in jail, but for the most people, it's not a distinctive difference.
No, we love you, Dan. Thanks. We love open pit and strip mining or whatever, strippers or whatever.
Thanks, Dano.
One more shout out. I'd like to shout out to one of my good friends and one of our many listeners, Sean Oleskovitz. He hates the Jets, but he loves the podcast. I coach football with Ollie, and I truly look forward to every day I get to coach with him because he tells me every single day at practice that the Jets have traded Ehlers every single day. You know, did you hear, Vaughn? Jets traded Ehlers today, every day. Every day, Mike. I'm not joking.
My new best friend, that's awesome.
So just yesterday, Sean texts me, Ehlers out for the season. Well, I'm busy at work, so I just text back to him. I go, yeah, whatever. And then I checked Twitter a while later, only to find out he's actually telling the truth this time. So thanks for the info, Sean, but especially thanks for listening.
You got boy who cried wolf on that one.
Absolutely. I'm telling you, it's every day. Avon, they traded
Ehlers. That's impressive. That level of commitment is impressive. So I have a shout out to my daughter and I were at the rink. She has a little social distance skating practice and assembly there. And we were leaving and I heard, hey, Mike. And it was my friend, Kirk Johnson, and he was with his son, Ollie Johnson, and Ollie's a goalie, and so they were padding up, and he was a listener of the podcast as well, and he was saying that he plays it for Ollie. I couldn't gauge his interest entirely, but Ollie had the sickest Winnipeg Jets goalie mask. It was awesome, and it was really good to see Kirk, and it was good to meet Ollie, so a shout out to those two. Okay, so we'll get started. Check-in time.
At this time, I'm going to ask that you fasten your seatbelts. We'll be experiencing some turbulence. Shouldn't last more than 15 or 20 minutes.
Okay. I don't know where you want to begin. It's just a bottleneck of emotions, and I had a bunch of topics that I wanted to address. Just a all-around stinker. I know on our last one, we were like, look, we'll be just elated if we come back and they went 3-0, and then we could, because we predicted they would go 1-2. And they did worse than that. Maybe we'll start with some of the bigger news. Scheifele, 55. 55! Got benched in the second game against Toronto. I'll clear the floor here because I know Scheifele's your boy. I start with this one because I think it's emblematic, maybe of the disarray that seems to be, at least from the outside in, seems to be taking place within the Jets organization. There's a lot of balls in the air, and I'm not sure who's the juggler controlling all of it. What were your thoughts on that? We haven't discussed this. I'm interested to see what your thought was on the benching, because again, we got drubbed throughout most of the three games for this past week.
Yeah, there's a little joking going back and forth on the group chat. I mean, I did completely blame you for the benching because you put Scheifele in the penalty box. And as we've discussed, Mike, this is a narrative setting podcast, right? Things happen after we discuss them. I don't know. Things are starting to roll in that direction, right? You bench Scheifele, he gets benched, or you put him in the penalty box and then Pomo benches him. I don't know. So to me, it was a very curious time to bench your top center. It was a Saturday night hockey night in Canada against the Leafs, top team in the division, who we're chasing, who already, you know, we already have one of our top three centers out with an injury. It was a very, very curious time to do it. I don't know if that's the moment to make your point, and I'm not sure precisely what precipitated it. I mean, we both see, as much as I love 55, and I do, I've seen him make far worse mistakes or lazy plays or whatever, and there was no consequence. So, you know, I don't know why it came then. You know, I have a lot more to say on it, but just with that, what are your thoughts?
I question the timing. The one thing that and mark this down, mark the date, mark the time. I do agree with it, though, because, again, on the last podcast, he was in the penalty box for me for the reasons that I think he was benched, is that I don't think the effort level is always there. And you're right. I have seen more egregious lack of effort from him on, you know, prior occasions. But I think in this instance, like, I recall watching that goal and watching him coast off going, that's bad. That shouldn't happen. Yeah. And I know a part of it is that he strings out though his shifts as long as he possibly can. And by the end of them, he's kind of gassed. And I think he was kind of gassed. But the problem for me, and so, you know, full stop, I agree with Paul Maurice. I'll get a t-shirt made. But what I don't agree with is the inconsistency or the selection of Scheifele to pick on. Because there are many moments where, whether it's Morrissey or Connor or Pullman, Wheeler in some instances, there have been really lackluster plays from just about any Jet. And that happens in the course of a regular season all the time.
Sure.
I don't know if doing that on Hockey Night in Canada to one of your most popular players, and from all I can glean, one of the more popular players in the locker room. I get that sort of the old hockey mentality is that you're sending a message, but it's 2021, and I don't know if that message is as effective as it was, say, 10, 15 years ago. So I question what it does optically to a team that seems to be unraveling a bit at the seams. And I think that's something that if you're concerned, or if this was a buildup of a lack of effort, to me, all of that gets addressed in a dressing room, right? Because Scheifele came out and he seemed pretty shocked. Yeah. And when interviewed, he was like, I don't agree with that, and I don't really understand why I was benched. To me, that speaks to the fact that this hasn't been an ongoing dialogue, and this hasn't been something that Paul Maurice has been harping on. It's something maybe that was festering within him and then manifested itself in the second period of a, like you say, a game against the top team in our division. So the execution of, I think, once again, was somewhat faulty, at least from what I can see.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head of something that I was going to address, in that the only way this makes sense to me is if, like, given all those other factors that we both identified, the only way this makes sense to me is if he was told, okay, Mark, tonight you're not going to do X, whatever X is. And then he does X. And then you go, Mark, we talked about this. Don't do X. If you do X, you're going to be sat. And then he does X again. Right. And then all those other factors don't factor into it. But if he's still confused after that, if he's coming out and saying, I'm not so sure. Like, to me, I didn't mind his response. I'll get to that in a second. But if he's coming out and he's a little dumbfounded as to why it happened and why it happened then there certainly wasn't those precursor discussions which I identified, right? It was just lashing out. It's just like we don't know what goes on behind the scenes, but there, based on the evidence or the data that we're seeing with who's saying what, it's as likely that it was a complete surprise and out of the blue to Scheifele as it was, you know, a systemic or systematic benching, in the sense that we're working on X, stop doing X. You know, we've warned you to stop doing X, and now there's a consequence. It sure doesn't feel like that was the case.
No, I agree. That's my issue.
Yeah, in terms of the player's response, I have no problem with either Hellebuck or Shifley saying they disagree with being benched or pulled. I have no problem with that. I have no problem with... What do you expect them to say? These guys are competitors. Listen, yeah, I've literally been in this situation. You know, as a football coach, you go to a guy, you don't get the start this week, this other guy's starting. I disagree with you, coach. Yes, that's exactly how you need to feel. What you need to do now is translate it into action. Okay, I have no problem with you saying you disagree with me that I'm wrong. How do you respond to it? How that is the key. And I thought Shifley was pretty decent against Edmonton. We'll talk about Edmonton in a minute. But, you know, much was made about, oh, Shifley disagrees with his coach. Hellebuck's pissed off. They should be. They should be. And that's okay. That's not a sign of a bad relationship. That's a sign of being a competitor. That was the least of the problems associated with all of that, with the pulling the Hellebuck early, quote-unquote early,
fair.
And benching Shifley.
Yeah, and the Hellebuck thing, you see various discourse on Twitter, and quite honestly, again, this is two times in one podcast. I agree. I think he should have been pulled, whether, and what else is Helly going to say? Oh yeah, I should have been pulled. I suck. No, of course he's a competitive guy, and I, you know, Maurice left him in there in the Edmonton game, probably for a period longer than he should have. But again, same result. So I took no issue with that. I guess maybe just to transition a bit, the Toronto games I kind of lumped together in that I did like some of the effort from some of our players. I thought Toronto got some fluky goals, obviously, and that kind of set the tone or the stage for some of our misfortune. And then it devolved into... I don't like Toronto, man. But what bothered me was that we let Ehlers and PLD get tangled up and go tete-a-tete with the likes of Thornton and Simmons. And you know who wins that? Toronto. They had a clear objective to become a thorn in our side, and we either A, didn't respond, or B, responded with our best players. You know, PLD took some silly penalties. Ehlers spent the better part of a period apparently injured, you know, getting tied up in knots with Thornton. Those are battles we don't win as a team. We're not that team. We don't have the personnel for it. I wish that we had a bit more jam up front, and you know, I hate to say it, but Dustin Byfuglien might fix some of that, but that's neither here nor there. I thought we got out of sorts really easily, because I thought for, you know, not an insignificant portion of those two games, we played okay. That we were we were in it, safe and except for a few fluky goals by Toronto. One bounce one way, one bounce the other way. I think we could have taken one of those games. It's just they got in our head, and it worked. They won that battle.
Yeah, I agree. Just a little bit, because the week was so interesting in the fact that, you know, you have the Edmonton game. We'll talk about that in a minute. It was like watching the Jets for the rest of the season, but in reverse, right? That you know, usually we get outshot, but we exhibit elite finishing that's supported by elite goaltending. You know, on the other end, our opponents, their small errors usually lead to our goals, and they have subpar goaltending. Well, it was completely the reverse. So, you know, that was the weird part about the Edmonton game. Now, I guess we should talk about, or we should, talk about Ehlers getting hurt. I thought he played really well. I thought he was one of the better players in the first game against Toronto. I thought he was one of the better players in the second game. So it's certainly unfortunate. A suspected separated shoulder, I've read.
Yeah.
But based on his ability to remain in the game, I'm guessing he'll be back for the playoffs, and this is just a narrative thing. I think that simply just by coming out and saying he's out for the regular season, it's a messaging thing. It's a PR thing in the sense that don't ask me about this every day. He'll be back when he's back. So they've just pushed off the question, is he ready yet? Is he ready yet? Is he ready yet? No. And then they can bring him back early if he's feeling better. But you know what? He's not a guy known for a high pain threshold. So I think he'll be okay. I'm optimistic he'll be back because, you know, there is a chunk of time until the playoffs, and he was able to finish the game.
Yeah, I'm no doctor, obviously.
Doctor? Doctor?
Doctor?
Doctor?
Doctor?
Doctor?
Doctor?
Doctor?
Doctor?
Doctor?
Doctor?
Doctor?
Doctor?
Doctor?
Doctor?
Doctor?
Doctor?
Doctor?
Doctor?
Doctor?
Doctor?
And doctor. Well, we miss anyone?
But it's... I've had that injury, and I got it through hockey, and he'll be back, but I don't think he'll be at 100%. But that said, how many guys are, right, at this stage of the season? I don't think anybody wakes up fresh as a daisy. And, it, you know, you're right, it is a huge loss, and I'm going to remain cautiously optimistic that he's back for the playoffs. The one thing I told myself with this podcast I was never going to do, but I think it warrants mentioning, is that I said this on the text chain, but I'm not a we got job by the refs kind of guy. But in those two Toronto games, I think we kind of got job by the refs. Like, there were just some terrible calls and some missed calls. And then, like, DeMello's embellishment call was just flat out wrong. And the downtrodden Winnipegger playing Toronto, immediately some, you know, conspiratorial thoughts come in terms of playing Toronto. But I just, again, it happens. It's cyclical, and I never want our conversation to devolve into who's doing what with the ref, because, you know, we'll have two games, we'll get the benefit of the doubt. I just thought it was worth mentioning that I did find the officiating rather atrocious for those two specific games against Toronto.
Well, on top of that, I'm going to throw out there that the real loser of the evening, the first night, the Thursday night, was the Jets fan watching the game on Sportsnet. You know, can you imagine what the narrative would have been if it had been two Leaf players that have been hit in the head, like Lowry and Perreault?
Oh my!
You know,
they would have shut down.
It was such a Leafs broadcast that Elliot Friedman had to stop and say, "Hang on a minute here, the Jets are still in this game." You know, so it was very, you know, there was a lot of Toronto happening in the broadcast on the ice. But that's not the reason we lost. I mean, those are unfortunate, but what happens in the broadcast booth has no bearing of what happens on the ice. So that's just like a pet peeve, and I'm basically telling myself to shut up there. as for the calls, I don't disagree with you, but I don't think they were defining. I mean,
fair.
I think it was in the 4-1 game, you know, it wasn't the ref's call. Like, when the puck comes off the stanchion and falls right onto Mitch Marner's stick while Hellebuck's behind the net, you know, or it perfectly goes off the backboard. Yeah, I mean, two of those goals were just like, I don't know how you defend them. The puck just bounces perfectly for them. So, you know, it wasn't all terrible in those games. Like, even the Edmonton game, I felt, in terms of the play, the territorial play and the chances, it was even. In fact, I found one analysis online from Micah McCurdy at Ineffective Math. He had the Jets with a higher expected goals than the Oilers, right? 2.8 expected goals for the Jets based on their chances to 2.4. Like, we just had bad goaltending. We had great offensive zone time, some of the better that I've seen all season. The defense activated in the... Yeah, the defense activated in the offensive zone more than I'd seen. But, you know, I think we were missing some of our shooters. And it's not that Kopp and Appleton played bad. They're just not on that level. They shouldn't be playing with Scheifele, who I thought played much better.
Yeah, I thought he was good. I thought he looked good.
Yeah, I thought Dubois was okay. Like, not great, but was okay.
Yeah.
You know, I was – these are – again, you know, when the Jets win, we find ourselves taking issue with the way they won. And now that they're losing, they're playing pretty decently. I don't know. This is a very, very curious team, and we'll talk more about that later. But I'd like to ask you, I don't know, did you see Paul Stastny's comments after the loss to Edmonton?
No, I didn't see that. No. What did he say?
Well, he had a pretty long... an honest diatribe about the Jets' bad habits and, you know, what it takes to win and how the team are cheating for offense a little bit. And, you know, to say that it didn't pull any punches would be misrepresenting it, because you know, it's a hockey player in a professional setting not pulling any punches, which means he says maybe a tiny bit, right?
Right. He lets so a little slip.
He lets a little slip out. So, but for me, they were an indirect indictment of the coaching staff. Like, players make mistakes and develop bad habits. That's why coaches are necessary. You know, if the problems the Jets are having are habit-oriented, yeah, you know, that's one of the key things the coaches govern, is the habits of the players.
That's one of the key things.
We have an old saying in football, what you allow is what you coach, right? So if you're seeing something that's not right and you don't say anything about it, you're effectively coaching that. So if there are a string of bad habits that are occurring consistently over time, well, one of two things: either the coaches are not correcting it, or two, they're correcting it and the players have shut them out, or they're correcting that with something that would make it worse. So, you know, if the culture of the team is allowing these bad habits to creep in, that's at least partially and probably mostly on the coaching staff. If not, what is their role? So I don't know if the comments of Stastny were interpreted that way, but that's how I read them as a coach.
I'm ready to go in, coach. Just give me a chance. I know there's a lot riding on it, but it's all psychological. Just got to stay in a positive frame of mind.
I'm like, boy, I wouldn't want a player saying this about me. Because he spoke a lot, like I said, about habits, and that's something that coaches govern.
Yeah, well, kudos to Stastny for providing sound bites other than 110% and all the regular pablum that gets spouted off on a regular basis. And I think there's probably, you know, you can't not be frustrated as a player or a coach. And I've just looked it up now. Yeah, I agree. I think that's directed at the coaching staff, obviously to the players as well, where it's like, we need to do better.
Yeah.
It's
certainly partially,
but coaching related, definitely. And I think that Edmonton exposes these bad habits more than any other team that we've played and that we do play in the North Division, because we have tendencies, and again, I don't want to pick on RD, because we're going to do that later, but you can't make mistakes, and you can't take shortcuts, and you can't provide open spaces and opportunities with Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, because that's what's going to happen. And if you don't have stellar goaltending, which we have not in a couple games, that's going to happen. And we look very average. And so, I commend him. I you know, who knows what will result or come of that, but kudos. Do we want to do the pre-boarding announcements? First class.
I have one seat in first class and one in coach. The price is the same because your flight was canceled.
Oh. Well, I'll take the first class.
Jerry, what? Why should you get the first class?
Elaine, have you ever flown first class?
No.
All right, then. See, you don't know what you're missing. I've flown first class, Elaine. I can't go back to coach. I can't. I won't.
Who you got?
Okay, I went completely off the board this week. I've gone and I've, you know, I'm trying to capture the zeitgeist of the week. And it was a tough week, as we talked about. So my first class assignment, who do I assign to first class? I assigned to first class my commitment to this team. This team is just good. This team is just good enough to break your heart, Mike. And even though I know that, I continue to watch. So that's why I'm putting my commitment to this team in first class.
I love the fact that you opened with zeitgeist and then turned it inward to say that it's about you. Well done. That's a special talent. Good job.
If that's not the zeitgeist of the 21st century, I don't know what is.
What's the record for saying zeitgeist on a podcast? Probably the Zeitgeist podcast. So I don't know how I'm going to follow
that. I'll tell you where you don't get the word zeitgeist is comewithus.com. Stop listening to them. Stay out of their airport lounge. Get into this airport lounge.
There's other words, but they're not appropriate for this one either.
Who have you got in first class, Mike?
I'm going to go, you're going to like this. And I promise, because you didn't give me forewarning on the PLD tattoo corrections, I'm going PLD.
Oh, nice.
I thought that he showed jam in both Toronto games. I think that it sort of misdirected ways sometimes, because he did take some silly penalties, but I thought he was one of the few guys who were like, I'm angry. I don't like this, and I'm going to get in. And, you know, I thought he was throwing his body around. I thought he was forechecking hard. And the Edmonton game, you said it, you know, I don't think it was a spectacular game, but, and I think you consult these too, there's hockey stat cards, website that every game they sort of break down somewhat roughly how statistically each Jets player fared. And in my opinion, humbly, I think they're pretty accurate. Like, I write down every game the players that I think perform well and the players that don't. And this statistical metric that they post graphically tends to match up with that. So maybe that's just confirmation bias. But anyway, I would be remiss if I didn't acknowledge that he's still struggling a bit, probably gripping the puck gripping the stick a bit tight, and he's had some bad breaks. But I thought overall he was one of our better players for, you know, if he can have a better player in a 0-3 drubbing for the week.
You know, I know we talked about him at length last week, and I do think that don't want to spend too much more time on dissecting his game, but the one thing that occurred to me this week that I wish I had sort of noticed prior to that is that, you know, I came up with this compare and contrast with Patrick Laine, and Patrick Laine is that guy. He will do, you know, amazing, obvious, you know, flair, dramatic type things, and then, but won't do 27 little things really well. And if you watch Pierre-Luc Dubois, it's exactly the opposite. He doesn't do anything that really jumps off the page. But if you watch him, because I'm really pulling for him, because I really want him to be a good player for us. He does a lot. Now, maybe it's not enough at this point. Maybe it needs to be more going forward. But he does a ton of little things really well. And he doesn't do that big dramatic thing at all. So part of it, when you switch those players out, there's such an adjustment, right? Because, you know, Laine would get you off your seat. He'd get your, you know, your blood flowing, whereas, you know, PLD's not that type of guy. So, good for you for putting him in first class. And who do you got in the penalty box?
I have Mr. Tucker Poolman. I thought we might have a double minor on that one. But again, I understand the difficulties covering Connor McDavid. I can't... my defensive prowess as a beer league hockey player was suspect at best. It's just, he's in the wrong place. He gets caught watching half the time. He was involved in just about every goal in Edmonton. His advanced stats, Corsi, Fenwick are terrible. I'm perplexed at what Paul Maurice sees in that we've got, like, Hinola's now back with the Moose. Congratulations to us. Stanley obviously can't get in the good graces, and I think, and I called it when it happened, when we got Jordy Benn, my only thought and only reaction was, because everyone was like, you know, it's a depth piece, good for us, you know, if we weren't going to go big, then this is a nice comfort zone to have. And I thought, nope, I know Paul Maurice, and if he's got an aging player who provides veteran leadership, that player's going in, and they're going to play significant minutes, and I think that's what's happened. And, you know, to tie it back to Poolman, we just have guys in here that I don't understand why, at least from the outside, it doesn't appear, like, their job is safe. They can make mistake after mistake after mistake, bad play after bad play, and no ramifications, no repercussions. I just, it quite honestly makes me mad, and I wish I understood it, but I don't. So Tucker Poolman might be in my penalty box for the rest of the season moving forward. I'm being dramatic for effect, but it really is frustrating that we've got a guy here who I think is barely an NHL caliber player at this point, and he just keeps getting ice time. He gets first line minutes, and it drives me bonkers.
You know, he is a bit of a curious case because he is tremendously athletic. He does a lot of things fast and well, and he's all over the place. And I just think he's the worst possible fit for Josh Morrissey. I think Josh Morrissey kind of looks over all the time and goes, "What are you doing? Why are you here? You're not supposed to be here. I don't understand what you're doing." And over and above keeping him in the lineup, you know, affixing him to Morrissey is equally as perplexing to me. So, you know, I you don't want to be like, I don't want to be that guy, like, you know, talk super negatively about a guy or a team. I'm not a fan. I don't think he should be in our top six. And I don't want to get any more harsh than that. But
fair. I've filled that mantle.
I know. It's one of those things. It's easy to you know, slip into the total negativity and the darkness. And you know, I struggle, as you know, I struggle with, you know, keeping it fun and keeping it reasonable. So, you know, you gotta check yourself. Like, you know, after the game, I stay off of Twitter. You know, I go on to Netflix. I try to watch something, whether they win or lose, right? I just try to get my mind out of it just so that, you know, I can keep some perspective. Now, Mike, do you want to hear who I got in the penalty box?
I absolutely do. Is it you again?
Yeah, it's all about me today. So, after a tough week, I've put my hope into the penalty box. Because
it's about you.
Yeah. This team is just good enough to break your heart, Mike, and even though I know that, I continue to watch. So my hope is now in the penalty box because I don't know where this team's going. After talking about how positive I want to be, I come up with that.
I didn't get the memo on the show sheet that we're getting Jack Handy deep thoughts with this one.
And now, Deep Thoughts by Jack Handy.
I would have modified my responses accordingly. I feel you. I do. You know, it is tough after a four game losing streak to remain hopeful. So we'll get you some help, Vaughn. We'll send somebody over. We have part of our EAP program here at the airport lounge. We'll make sure you have all the right 1-800 numbers.
No, that's all good. I got all of the. All the help I need here in my bottle of Jameson Irish whiskey, so which I was enjoying during our last podcast. I heard that the clink clink of my glass, it was the first time we recorded in the evening. So I decided to have you know a nice invigorating constitutional tonic with me while we were broadcasting. I thought it might help the words flow a little bit.
I was maybe a little sensitive because when I was listening back to it, every time I started talking, I could hear a big swig. And I was like, is this what Vaughn needs to listen to me talk on a podcast? A giant swig of whiskey? But I'm glad it was circumstantial,
not just
not
you.
Causational.
It's life related.
Okay, so we have what I think is a very exciting topic. Vaughn sent me a little while ago a couple articles from a few folks on the internet, and specifically related to defensive play. And I thought, and Vaughn, I think you thought, they were excellent, and I thought they were illustrative. You know, they were league-wide, but Vaughn and I think are going to attempt to extrapolate some of that and make it obviously very Jets-specific. But I thought it was a great way to discuss our defensive unit as a whole in a both statistical and somewhat less analytical way. So, Vaughn, maybe I'll let you sort of introduce the article, sure. What it was all about, and then we can break it down from there.
Absolutely. So, hats off to Jay Fresh and Evolving Hockey for their article that was entitled "Which Teams Are Relying Most on Defensemen to Generate Offense?" And the reason that this was interesting for us, and again, this didn't look specifically at the Jets, but there were specific things about the Winnipeg Jets that came out that were very prominent in this. And it really sparked some further thought and discussion. So I'll quickly go over what the article tries to do. And then what we're going to do is we're going to take a look at the Jets defenseman in the role in the attacking zone. So we'll talk about that a little bit. Then we'll take a look at the role the Jets defenders are playing at getting the puck out of the defensive zone and into the neutral zone. And then we'll pull it all together for some concluding thoughts. Now, some of what, again, we're throwing a shout out to Jay Fresh and Evolving Hockey. So some of what we say is going to be directly taken from their excellent article.
Yeah,
some
call.
I think some of the more back end pieces are going to be things that we're providing analysis to what data that they provided. So this article examines how much of a team's offensive plays, which include shots, scoring chances, and transition plays, come from defensemen. As noted in the article, it's important to understand that more offense generated from defenders isn't necessarily good or bad. Further context is required. However, this article does examine and identifies the process through which a team attempts to generate goals. And of course, we'll pay particular attention to the Jets within this analysis. Mike, you wanted to jump in?
Yeah, I just, and just to add a little bit of context in terms of, because it's important to stress that, and the data bears this out, is that it doesn't necessarily mean that more offense generated from defenders is, you know, all the way good or all the way bad. I mean, just hypothetically speaking, you could have, your forwards could be terrible, and so your defense has to generate both offensive and defensive breakouts. Or you could have two really good D that it would be foolish to not rely on them heavily. It again, it's very team dependent, but I just wanted to provide sort of practical examples of where situations might differ team to team and how these statistics relate to that.
Awesome. And if I can provide a small degree of foreshadowing, the Jets are an interesting example and perhaps a curious one among NHL teams.
Yeah.
But yeah. Mike's right. So let's talk about the Jets' defensemen in the attacking zone. Okay, so the article first examines which teams have the highest percentage of their 5-on-5 unblocked shot attempts taken by defenders. The Jets are 10th in the league at 30. Yeah, big deal. The Jets are 10th in the league. Not much to see here. Okay, so then it examines shot quality, specifically what the quality of 5-on-5 goals taken or shots taken by defensemen. By this measure, the Jets fall to 29th in the league at 12% expected goals at 5-on-5. So this reflects the Jets' defensemen taking a lot of shots, but from very low percentage areas. So, which is a different way of saying these shots are coming from places that are very far away from the net.
Yeah, and just, again, okay. To me, that is, and I'm interested in your thought. I mean, again, it's pretty easy to me to ascertain from that, like, basically, we take a lot of shots, or above average number of shots from our D, from really bad spots from far away. Now, I'm a basketball guy, and that, you know, in basketball, you want to force your opponents to shoot from areas where there's the lowest percentage of scoring a bucket. And if so, we make it easier on our opponents, you know, by these statistical measures, we make it easier on them by shooting from areas that are non-dangerous. So that, like, right there, right off the hop, we're a bit behind the eight ball on the D end.
Yeah, I'll get to it in a second, but to use your analogy, we're a team that fires up a lot of three-pointers, but don't have good three-point shooters.
Right, there you
go. So the article plotted total quantity of shots coming from defenders, where the Jets are quite high, versus the overall quality of those shots. And when you compare these two or combine these two, the resulting effect was the Jets appear to be the worst team at generating quality offensive chances from their defenders. Put differently, as you said, they tried this a lot and do not have much success at all.
Yeah.
So considering this, it should come as no surprise that the Jets are last in the NHL in average expected goals from their defenders 5-on-5. The top team is Vegas. We're at 2.1%, they're at 3.6%. Not a huge difference there, but we are last. So how does the rubber meet the road on this? What are the actual goals scored by our defenders? Again, the Jets are near the bottom of the league, 30th overall at 7% of goals scored coming from defenders. This is significantly below the Dallas Stars at 25%. Buffalo is third with 22% of their goals coming from defenders. Columbus is 7th. Calgary is 8th. Why do I mention those? Because they're not great teams, but they're getting a lot of goals from the defenders. The worst team, the only team worse than the Jets, is the Toronto Maple Leafs, and they don't struggle for goals. So again, this is interesting, but we need to look at this even more deeply to understand the process through which the Jets are trying to generate offense. Anything to add, Mike?
No. And I, again, that was what surprised me, is that I had expected or hoped when I was going through this breakdown that it would show, okay, the top 15 teams are all within the top 20 of these metrics and vice versa, exactly. Right? I'll get to it in our conclusion. I did do a bit of finagling with the numbers, so there are some, albeit somewhat loose, correlations with some of this. But no, I think, you know, it tells a story, though, that I don't know if it's good to be last in just about every metric when it comes to quality and expected goals from your defenseman. It doesn't take a math major to know that it's probably not great, regardless of whatever your team chemistry or team makeup is.
The heaviest shot defender in the entire NHL is the Winnipeg Jet. And who is it? Your friend and mine, Logan Stanley. When he is on the ice, 32% of all shots come from him.
You're a chucker.
Chucker.
That's right. Every time you get the ball, you shoot.
I can't believe you called me a chucker.
No way I'm a chucker. I do not chuck. Never chuck. Never have chuck. Never will chuck. No chuck. You chuck?
Of all shots. Wow. Not just from the defenders. Yeah. Okay? So, what the article does make clear is that the Jets absolutely lead the NHL in the lowest quality shots by defenders 5-on-5. The Jets have the first, second, and third ranked defenders at taking the lowest quality shots in the NHL.
Good
Nate
for us.
Nate Beaulieu has the lowest expected amount of goals 5v5 per shot attempt in the entire NHL, followed closely by Forbort and Stanley. They're the worst shot taker. That's the left side of our D right there. You know,
that's right.
You know, welcome to the left side of our defense. These defenders are quick to shoot, and our opponents and are likely okay with them doing so, as their attempts are unlikely to translate into goals. So what does this mean? What this suggests to me is that there is a fundamental inability from the Jets to have their defenders assist in developing quality offensive scoring chances.
Yeah, I agree. And it's as simple as that. It was alarming. We literally, in the entire NHL, we have the top three guys of shot attempts, but with the lowest quality of shots. It was congratulations to us. You know, you gotta be the best at something, and we're the best at that.
Yeah. You know, what one thing the article doesn't do is examine whether the shots from distance are getting to the net and, you know, are being turned into goals by forwards. Okay, it doesn't look into, but I'll tell you what, my eye test doesn't suggest that. I don't think that's what's happening here. What about you, Mike? I don't think that's the case. I think these guys are taking shots from far away, and it's not creating any offense.
No, and as much as we used to lament the Tyler Myers and even something like Kulikov, but and it's something that I've noticed, and it was bothering me, and I'm like, what is it about our presence in the offensive zone? When it goes back to the point, our D-men, consistently, they get it. They look to shoot. If there's a shooting lane blocked, they skate to the boards, and then they dump it around the corner, or they take a terrible shot, and it doesn't result in a sort of a tangible rebound or any sort of scoring chance. It's more often than not turns into puck transition or a loss of possession. And over and over again, like Pion can do it and Morrissey can do it. They make a move. They can get inside the offensive zone. But the majority of our D-core really struggle with what to do when there's no obvious choice when they're at the point. It's a lot of weak shots in traffic or dump around the boards. And you know, these statistics bear that out.
So our D aren't really contributing in the offensive zone. So let's take a look at how the Jets defensemen are getting the puck out of our zone, okay? And that's covered in the article. It's important to note, and the article does, that 61% of the time in the NHL, it is a forward that carries the puck out of the defensive zone into the neutral zone. So it's a big chunk, okay? However, there is a relatively large difference amongst teams who can rely on defenders to contribute to this and those who rely more on forwards to carry out this important task. Now, let's just start with the big one right up front. The Jets rank last in the NHL in percentage of controlled exits from the defensive zone by defenders. Again, the Stars are first, 48%. Sabres are second. Sharks are third. Again, you know, it not strongest teams, and this could simply mean that the Jets defenders are advancing the puck out efficiently via a pass. There is no evidence provided that suggests that teams are better off with defenders executing controlled exits as opposed to having a forward exit the zone with the puck.
Yeah.
Okay. But, you know, the Jets aren't doing that. Similarly, the article also indicates the Jets are also very adverse to having their defenders carry the puck into the offensive zone. Okay. They don't carry it out of our zone, nor do they carry it into the offensive zone. Either they've passed it up to a forward or they dump it in. The Jets are 31st of 31 teams for offensive zone entries by a defender at only 6%.
I'm just doing the now, math.
When we...
Sorry, I'm just doing the math. 31st of 31st, carry the one, divide by two. That's last. That's last place again.
That's...
Sorry, go ahead.
Exactly. That's your private sector math skills.
I am smart. S-M-R-T. I mean, S-M-A-R-T.
So when we examine the percentage of defensive zone exits by defender against the percentage of offensive zone entries by defender, the Jets are again last in the NHL. So what does this all suggest for the Jets? Okay, they let their defenders do very little offensively, and perhaps more importantly, they do very little to support the creation of offense.
Yeah.
It's important to note that several of the teams which rank highly in the categories mentioned are non-playoff teams, which underscores the point made at the outset that suggests there is no inherent benefit or bias towards teams that can generate offense through defenders. But the Jets defenders aren't allowed or can't do very much, and that's what's interesting. And not only is it's by a lot. They're the last of the NHL in a number of these categories.
Yeah, the one thing I wanted, so two things. I wanted to see where the North Division, some of those teams, fell in some of these metrics. And the Leafs and Flames are, you know, and Ottawa to some extent too, they ranked poorly in some, but the consistent thing that I notice is that we're basically last or next to last in all of them. And again, my 2 cent analysis, that's not good, because you just said it, like, we're not getting, and you know, the eye test bears it out. We're just not. We don't have the defensive core with sort of the wherewithal, or maybe it's talent, or maybe it's scheme. But for whatever reason, the RD aren't contributing getting the puck out of our end, and then they're not contributing significantly to offensive or good offensive scoring chances. And again, I think we've been fairly consistent throughout. This is episode 8. This is our obviously our Achilles heel. But it was just the way this statistically was set out. It was like, okay, are we the worst ever? Because it was like, I'm bummed about our defense. But after reading this, I was like, okay, I'm really bummed. Like, I wish there was a historical record of this, because I thought this is. I don't know a team that can get much worse statistically in this way. So I would be, you know, I don't know if anybody has it. If anybody does, give me a shout out. But it drove home a point that we sort of already knew, but it was sobering, where I was like, whoa, man, this really hits home here.
Well, it underscores other things we've been talking about. We've just shown, or Jay Fresh and Evolving Hockey have shown, that, you know, through like using actual data, that the Jets defenders don't contribute to offense. So it's all on the forwards to do. And as we've discussed, when the Jets forwards are hot, they win, right? And when they're not, there's nothing to fall back on, right? There's no support there offensively. We're relying on elite shooting from our forwards to win games. And this bears out in what we talked about. Remember, the Jets have won every game where they've scored 4 or more goals. Every game. And they have only won 5 of 25 games when they've scored 3 or less, right? So it's all about elite shooting percentage. There's no support for them. And that's where I think I mentioned where the rubber meets the road before. And I think that's the outcome of this, is that, you know, we are a one-trick pony. We don't have a diversity in our attack. We're a team that, you know, will only throw the football or only rush the football. However, we just have no other way. We're just not interested in a diversity of attack. You know, the forwards have to get the job done, and if they don't, we're going to lose. And we've seen You know, and we've been tremendously fortunate with having no injuries up until very recently.
Very recently, yeah.
And I think that's driven why we've been able to amass a pretty decent record. But again, when we're not getting elite shooting from our forwards, we're simply just not winning hockey games.
Okay, we're here. Last call.
Hey, guys, just letting you know it's last call. Almost time to wrap it up.
Okay, last call. More fun for you Jets fans this week. We have Edmonton on Wednesday, and we all know the recent trials and tribulations with playing Edmonton. I think we've lost 4 or 5 in a row to them, but hopefully we'll have Adam Lowry back, and we'll get some pushback on that. We then have Friday, Montreal on Friday, 6 p.m. start. So get home from work early, get to the Liquor Commission early, avoid those long lines. That's why I get my beer on Thursdays. Anyways, Ottawa then on Monday. You get Saturday and Sunday off. Spend it with your family. Hug your children because the Jets are back at it Monday, 6 p.m. in Ottawa. So home game against Edmonton in Montreal in Ottawa. Let's hope the next time we meet we're more happy than we are today.
Again, I'm going to continue to remain optimistic because, and we've covered this, that whatever deficiency they might have, they have proven resilient. This is the first really significant nadir in at least the 2021 season. And so I'm reasonably confident that once we get past Edmonton, that we might be able to string a few W's together. And Ehlers being out, that's not helping anybody. But it sounds like Lowry's working his way back. And I think some of the shell shock, maybe it's a wake-up call. So I'm surprisingly optimistic for the coming week.
Yeah, my hope needs to get out of the penalty box.
It got pardoned.
So, fellow travelers, that's it for this episode of the podcast. Please follow us on Twitter at Airport Lounge 55, on Facebook, even though we don't do anything there, and check us out on Apple Podcasts. Thanks for listening, and be sure to come back next week to the Airport Lounge because the first round is always on us. Until then, go Jets, go.